Okay, good morning in a very, very rainy Gauteng. I mean, it's like the roads on our rivers and the rivers on our dams. And just don't be stupid. Drive through that shit because someone went over a low water bridge, I think sometime last year. And then she was in the car with a friend of hers, and they were both washed away off the low water bridge. And the one girl managed to make it out, but the other one drowned. And I'll tell you what, that's got to be a really, really terrible way to go. You know, you're just driving over a bridge thinking, okay, I'm good. And then the water comes and there's nothing you can do. And sometimes you can't get out because there are differentials in the pressure within the car and outside of it. And that's a horrible way to die. I'll tell you what, not worth it. So rather, if you've got some urgent appointment that you are rushing to, tell them you'll be late or cancel it. Not worth it, honestly. And it is. It's crazy rain. I mean, I started off on Monday saying, I'm very happy about this. It's like a gentle rain. It's coming down slowly. It's not the end of the world. And then last night, I was sitting in a house where the rain has been so bad in our area that actually the electricity wasn't working at all. So I was in the dark again last night. Felt like, you know, mid kind of 2021-22 load shedding, that kind of vibe. So I'm glad to be out of that. Woke up this morning with lights on everywhere. You ever gone to sleep and then you wake up the next day thinking, well, the power's going to be off. You're on and it's like there's light everywhere. And you're like,
your taps are on as well.
Taps on too. You left it on all night. Yeah, taps on is a lot worse. You may recognize our guest from this morning. This guy has been on the show before. He was here in July of 2024, which is last year. And we spoke to him about his film that was released at the time, a short film released by a conservation NGO, all about his story, which was the story of losing his leg to a shark, which is, you know, now that's
a way to go.
That's a story. No, but I mean, you made it. You didn't die.
Tie the two.
You stupid idiot. If you died, we wouldn't be interviewing a corpse.
I thought you were going to tie the two, the bridge.
No, I was going to say, at least being eaten, some part of you being eaten by a shark is like heroic and cool.
Unintentional.
Like drowning in a car in a low water bridge is like, nah.
Yeah.
You know?
No fear.
Right?
Fair.
How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm also a little bit wet.
Well, you've been on a show where you're all about swimming.
Yes.
So, there's some Afrikaans.
It's hard
show.
To dry off now. It's hard to dry off these days.
So, yeah, for you, it's always going to be like the water. The water just draws you in.
No, it's been really good. I think last year when we spoke, I was still in the process of negotiating the role on the show.
Right. This is a show on CakeNet?
Yes. Yes.
And what's it called?
Deeper waters.
Deeper water. So deep water.
Deep water, still ground. Still
ground. There we go. Yeah. Now there's a saying. It goes, stille waters, diepe grond, onder dwaal die duivel rond.
There we go.
Which is all about how, like, if someone is, if there's still waters, it means that it's in a deep place. So that means the devil's busy down there.
Well, the show's all about drama.
Oh.
Set around
there's people killing each other and shit, right?
Killing each other. There's affairs. There's, you know, incest.
There's nothing
with the...
Really, there's incest as well?
I think there's some minor incest. Mild,
wow.
Maybe third
so incest with
cousin.
Minors. That's the
no,
most
no, no,
terrible
no
kind
minor,
of incest.
There's no... There's
shocking.
Mild incest.
I mean, if
incest.
You're going to do incest, don't do it with the minors. Kind of is the sicko.
No, there's... But it all revolves around a swimming club. And,
okay.
I mean, that's...
But we all know that's where the really bad shit happens.
That's where the bad shit happens, yeah.
Okay.
But it's been a lot of fun. It's been a completely different experience speaking in Afrikaans.
So you're now you're a full-time actor.
Yes.
Okay, so actoring is very serious, we're told by the people in Hollywood.
Yeah,
what's your character? What's your role on this show?
My character's name is Lucas Dupria.
Oh, that's very original.
Yeah. Well, Lucas.
Lucas,
yeah.
Okay. So do people call you that when you walk around in town?
They do. They do.
They do, huh?
Pretoria. Johannesburg. I don't know how much Johannesburg watches the show. But it's got a large following. 45 to 50 and up, and then 18 and down as well. So there's a nice mix of.
But no one between 18 and 45.
There are definitely viewers, but I haven't seen the numbers and I don't know the exact figures.
But that's terrible for you because those are the people you do want to recognize you.
Yes, no. Yeah. I think there's some hardcore Tunnies out there that are
the Tunnies are
big fans. There's a Facebook Klets group with 33,000 people, and every evening, the episode gets dissected and screenshots get taken and comments are made. Oh. So my character currently has just been found on Northcliffe Corpy. I've been missing, so I'm back.
What happened to you? Oh, you can't tell us because it's only coming out on the show now.
Well, I found out that I have a father.
I am your father, Luke.
Not quite as dramatic
Lucas,
as that. It happened at the pool, though.
I am your father, Lucas.
It happened at the pool. And for 21 years, my mother lied to me and told me that.
But your dad
died in the ocean.
Oh, that was meanwhile, story. He was boning your mom at the pool.
Meanwhile, my mom and dad had an affair.
Oh, each.
She ran. Yes, together. Multiple on his side. One on my mother's side.
Yeah, there you are. Look at you on the show. You look exactly the same.
There we go. That's me in the morning.
Yeah.
That's actually the face of when I found out.
All right. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. So
yeah, that's the moment.
Is acting, okay, and I'm not going to be sarcastic here because I could be, but is acting hard? Because for me, it's very, very difficult to pretend. And I know that people, that's why they pay actors, because they're better at pretending. But I think it's particularly difficult if you are trying to deliver a performance which is authentic, trying to get in under the skin of the act of the character. You're trying to portray something to the audience in facial expression and in body language that you can't do in words, and that does take a skill. I mean, it's something that very few people can do convincingly. Do you enjoy doing that?
There's parts I love, and then there's parts that are challenging. I think the shift from theater to TV is definitely quite a jump for me, because with theater we've got a whole month to rehearse.
So you were a theater kid.
Yeah, so I've done a couple of other things.
So why are you gay? because you know theater kids. No, like
here we go. This is my coming out moment.
No. God bless the. You've got a kid, and please. My sister studied drama, and all these people that she studied with who would like hug trees and burst into tears. And, you know, I mean, it's like there is a thing. And I suppose in your early 20s, it's cool to be in a job or studying something which is cool and which gets you attention. But what drew you to it? Because you grew up in like
a little town.
Yeah, in the little town in the Karoo, right? So how did like theater become a thing? And now TV obviously is a different kettle of fish, but it's maybe more prestigious.
It's definitely us. So the two, just quickly on the two different mediums, it's the time difference is completely different. Mm-hmm. So we shoot, you know, throughout the year, we shoot hopefully three months in advance in terms of where the episodes are at, because it's a weekly show. So people watch Monday to Thursday.
Right.
You think of theater, you rehearse for a whole month and then you do maybe a month or 2 months of a tour. So your bonding looks different. The way you engage with the script looks different. But I think as well, it's just back to truth and back to what you were saying about how, you know, do you enjoy it and is it easy? I think finding truth in the character, I know that sounds like a very stoic.
No, go on. I'm not going to do what I normally do and take the piss.
But I think just, if I can step in and go, okay, well, I found the elements of truth in this scene, I'll be happy. You know, it's not always, it's sometimes a hit or miss because you're also on time. So we're shooting, you know, maybe 10 to 12 scenes a day. I'm not necessarily in all of those, but there's a time limit. The crew are there for 10 to 12 hours a day as well. So it's a completely different machine.
I reckon the hardest job is probably the people who have to put that together, right? Like the
post-production.
Well, yeah, but even before post-production, the producers themselves, you have to arrange the shoots, make sure that everybody who's there gets the call, make sure that the lighting people, the set people, the wardrobe people. I mean, that's a hell of a coordination.
And you've got a crew of about 60 people, and it's they are nonstop. So I have a huge amount of respect for the people that are behind the scenes and the people that do the work. We get to step on and have big egos, you know.
Well,
and
I mean,
we
listen,
keep them in check.
So I think,
I want to comment on your question of where the acting came from, because I'm still figuring out. I'm 29, figuring out my life and what I want to do and the things I'm interested in. But creativity has always been part of it, and storytelling since I was a kid, because my mom taught us drama. I was homeschooled. Don't know if you remember that story.
I do remember that part of it. Yeah.
Still shedding
a
the scars.
Homeschooled.
I'm a homeschooled
weird.
Kid.
Yeah, definitely.
but we can go into how amazing my mother is later. But yeah, so we didn't have a lot of access to drama clubs and, you know, theaters and growing up. We did performances at the Ulay Fierce.
Yeah. Well, it was the only time people came to town, right?
Literally buy olives and olive oil. And that's when I started performing. And then our parents would get us to sing for guests and neighbors.
What's this town called again?
Prince Albert.
Oh, yeah. Named after
not
the
piercing.
Yeah, named after
not
the piercing.
But the royal family. Piercing,
yeah.
And
oh, and Princess, Queen Victoria's husband. Yeah, quite right, right. Yeah.
So, and I watched a lot of old films growing up. A lot of musicals. I always mention the Marx Brothers. It's a very weird niche part of American film. And me and my brothers were a little bit like the Marx Brothers growing up, I would say, because we were all a bit motley looking. And my mom's theater was called Patchwork Theater. So we kind of took the clothes from our cupboard, put them on and started performing. So it's always been something I wanted to do.
Right.
But my second option for studies was geology. I got in for a BSc. Sure. So there's still the calling for, let's call it order.
And science.
Science. And I'm interested in healing.
Well,
it's a bit on the nose, but
no, I think a lot of people are very drawn to that stuff at the moment because they see so much around them that's a little chaotic.
Mm.
It's a bit of a mess.
It's very messy.
I mean, I know so many people who've been on retreats or spiritual journeys or whatever you want to call them. And, you know, the old version of me would have just immediately started mocking that and saying how dumb it is. But I kind of think if you're doing something like that, if you're consciously going about trying to improve yourself in whatever way, whether it's eating better, whether it's making amends with long lost relatives who you've had fights with, whether it's going out and, you know, joining some group of hippies who want to change the world for the better. Do it. Well, I don't see how it can be bad.
What created that shift for you, do you think?
I don't know. I think I just stopped really thinking about entertaining people all the time.
Okay.
There was a definite part of me that was like, what's the funniest way to respond to this? Is to take the piss out.
Mm.
And now, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday about how when people say something about you that, and you don't care about them, in other words, that they're not an important person in your life, but they're giving you unsolicited feedback about something. Like let's say that, oh, I don't like your hair, or that's a shit outfit, or whatever.
Yeah, or you've hurt my feelings, or.
Yeah, I mean, if it's someone you don't care about, that's not like an important person in your life, you should immediately say to them, I really don't care what you think. And what you think of me is not important to me. And you should move on very quickly from that because there is no time to get stuck in those conversations with people that you don't care about. Life is just too damn short. And the same goes for trying to entertain people if they're not paying the bills. You know, if you're entertaining people because you're a comedian and they're paying you to stand on the stage because they've come to your event and they're giving you cash from their pockets, then yes, you have to entertain those people. And similarly, I suppose if you're an actor or if you do a show like this one, then it is my job here to entertain people. But if you meet me at the shops and you're like, I saw you on the show the other day, you were really funny, I tell that joke again, I will tell you to fuck off.
But the thing is, people build a relationship with you.
In their head.
Yeah, in their head. But you do in an interesting way. You live three days a week.
Hmm.
So for 3 days a week, people can turn on their computers and you right there in their home, in their
car.
Is
it true, by the way, that you thought that someone had died? Is that why? And that's why James phoned you yesterday to come on the show?
I didn't know someone had slipped
James,
off
is that
the,
true? Yeah.
The batting list.
He thought someone had died. We did.
I did say this is not a friendly coffee catch up. This is definitely me stepping in and waving the flag as well. But
yeah,
I'm
chuffed about the show that you're on. It sounds like it's going really, really well.
Yeah, it's also time to think. You know, I think sometimes in a 9-to-5, I've worked in sales, I've worked in business development. That very limited experience, you know, from in the grander scheme of things. But it's given me a taste of what it's like to work for a company and what those routines and frameworks look like. And I love that order, but I think stepping away from it sometimes also gives you perspective on what you don't and what you do want to do. So, right. You know, I think creativity and storytelling are always going to be things I want to bake into my work, but I'm very open to working with an organization and having other life experiences. I mean, I'm 29 turning 30 this year, so I've got time, you know, to do other things. And
what kind of stuff would you really like to do? What would be your sort of dream job? Because everybody has some idea of, like, that's the thing that would really get me excited, waking up every morning. And of course it takes 3 months in doing that, and then they're like, I ask for this.
it's not that clearly defined, but it definitely sits in a creative environment with a team that's growing, where there's room for—
That sounds so general.
Let me finish though, I'm getting there.
Oh my god, how general.
And definitely in the branding space, where I can use my gift for speaking, for engaging with other people, for building relationships.
And your story, frankly, because I never get sick of hearing about that shark trying to eat you. It's always just fucking horrific, right? And at the same time, like, slightly comical. And
you have to have humor. If you can't find a way to laugh at your situation in life, sometimes
it tried to eat you.
It did.
It tried to eat you like a meal, like a McDonald's happy
and
meal.
I still go back into the ocean. So I think it definitely shifted my wires a little bit.
So Audrey says in the comments that your mother on that show that you're on, Deepa Vartas, has real ho vibes. Is she a bit of a ho, your mother?
Audrey, I can't know the show praat nie.
Okay. All right.
Max Bali for my mom. And sy is nie 'n perfekte persoon nie.
This is the mom in the show who had the affair with someone else, and your dad had an affair with someone else.
Yes, and
so you
and
come
kept
from
it
a really
secret.
Happy home.
I come from a wonderful happy home.
I heard something fascinating yesterday.
But thanks for watching, Audrey. Thank you for supporting the show.
Apparently, guys who grow up in a household where they don't have a dad— I thought this was an interesting topic of discussion at some point, and it's in my head now, so I have to say it. Men who grow up without a dad, their telomeres, the extremities of their chromosomes, the ends of their chromosomes, which unravel when cells split, for example. And a telomere is usually a very good indicator. The state of the telomere is a good indicator of your longevity.
This is looking at DNA.
This is genes. So the end of the strand, the telomere, gets shorter. I think boys who grow up without fathers, they get 15 to 20% shorter, that telomere, by the time that they're in their teens to 20s. So they have a shorter life expectancy. So guys who grow up without a dad are not only, for all the reasons we've discussed on the show so many times, and again, this is nobody's fault, right? So we're not saying, you must ignore these people and write them off. It's interesting that there is a physiological byproduct to that social situation that we thought was the whole problem, right? So socially, emotionally, there are obviously issues for, especially for young guys, but also for young girls who grow up without dads. Young girls are likely to hit puberty 1 year earlier if their dad doesn't live in the house. So if you're being raised by a single mom as a girl, you will reach puberty a year earlier, which makes a huge difference in someone's life. So we think about these things and we're like, it's just a psychological thing. It's just social. It's a social construct, is what a lot of people like to say. Here is evidence emerging now.
It's wild.
Of actual physiological change that happens in people because of their social situation, which is amazing. It teaches you so much about people and how they kind of interact and how important it is to actually just be honest with people and to, like, deal with people in an sincere way rather than, like, try to just bullshit them or tell them what they like, what you think they want to hear. You know, that's the stuff that most people do, and it's actually massively damaging.
Yeah, well, what's that saying? The truth sets you free.
Yeah.
You know?
It's absolutely right.
Sets you free because we keep things in the back of our minds.
I've always found, like, it's just easier to remember shit if you tell the truth. If you lie about everything, then eventually you're going to get to a point where you can't remember all the stories.
Yeah. and you'll, so and you build a separate, you build a whole separate world around your lie, and then you still live your, well, the adjacent, which I guess would be your truth, you know.
Well, Slippery Pickle says, Gareth, why are you bashing bastards this morning? Are we allowed to call them bastards anymore?
If we're talking about Jon Snow, we can.
Yeah, you're a bastard, Jon Snow.
But I think to that point as well, it's also interesting if you have the ability to step in and be a mentor,
yeah,
guide someone, you don't understand, you might not understand the implications now, but the ripple effect, you know, to the, yeah, even the
and,
DNA.
And I'll tell you what, you could even improve someone's longevity.
Yeah.
Just by being a really a nice, decent, solid role model.
And according to that statistic, slow down puberty for...
for girls who are just like growing up way too fast. Okay, so number one cause of boy children getting involved with gangs and violent crime is fatherlessness. And we know, by the way, the reason this keeps coming up as a subject on this show and why it should be a bigger deal in South Africa is because this is probably the root cause of so much of what's going on that is wrong with society. And you don't hear a lot about it. I mean, we talk about it from time to time, but I honestly don't see a lot about this on TV. You know, I hear a lot about how, you know, go single moms, and of course they're doing their best, but we've almost created this bizarre world where we don't look, we just pretend the fatherlessness thing doesn't exist, you know. Mm. We just pretend that's not an issue in a country where it is an issue and where it's probably the biggest social ill we have. And of course it's got all kinds of reasons. We're not looking to blame anybody except those fathers, because
yeah, except the fathers.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to. It's got to start with at least the dad taking some responsibility, and then from there on, it's got to be about, you know, how the bad decisions were made, and you can't reverse the past. So you've got to try and build better things from there, and that's where you're right. Like if you're a guy who doesn't have kids, or you have kids but you can kind of manage more than one thing, there's so many young men in this country and women who would love to have a decent, honest, like good person who can give them the male role modeling that they didn't have growing up.
Mm.
And if you can do that in a meaningful way, I think you'd be doing tremendous good. Forget about like soup kitchens and shit. There's a thing you can do.
I think the other thing there as well is, when you meet someone, you expect, and I give you, let's say I say something to you, you know, are you're looking good, or are you looking fit, or I say something negative, like, you know, when's the last time you trained?
You fat bastard.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, you're not a fat bastard.
Flex.
You're
am a sexy
I a fat
bastard?
But,
and I hear you laughing there.
But we don't, I often assume a response versus understanding that you've got a whole history you've lived. You've got a whole lot of things that you perceive differently to me. So when I give you something and put it on your plate, that gets digested based on how you've been living in the world, not how I've been living in the world. So for me to expect you to respond in kind is not considering the other person in the conversation.
Yeah, but think about how many people do really cool, really kind things all the time without thinking about how other people are going to react. They just do these good things.
But when the reaction's negative.
Oh, yeah, that'll put a lot of people off.
Yeah.
But it also comes from a place where some people are just not used to kindness.
Yeah.
We've got to acknowledge also we live in a very screwed up world where, you know, perfectly harmless, innocent children grow up being made to feel like terrible things are on their way all the time. Anyway, I do want to change the subject because you said what's on your plate. I cooked the best fucking steak the other day.
What steak?
It was a rump.
Okay.
With fat.
And you didn't cut the fat, you left the fat on.
I left it on.
Okay.
It was massive. I mean, I ate.
Yeah.
Okay. It was huge.
Okay.
I had half of it that night that I cooked it, and then I couldn't eat any more. And you know how amazing. All I had was the steak, and then I cut up a couple of tomatoes.
Do you get your pan ready? What's your process?
Oh, dude,
do you do a little butter?
So, yeah, a little bit of butter in the pan just to keep everything from like sticking. But it's not to, you know, it's not some huge big block of it either. Bit of salt and pepper, keep things straightforward and simple.
Do you do that little thing where you the fat?
Yeah.
You have to hold it.
The fat a little bit.
Yeah.
Everyone knows you got the fat.
But you've got to balance it on its on its edge. You do both sides, and then you just
damn right.
Just get it to sizzle a little bit.
Yeah. Nice, man. It was so good.
I made my first. Speaking of food, I called my aunt because she runs a restaurant in Prince Albert. I'm pushing Prince Albert really hard. Go visit Prince Albert.
Yeah, for all the 10 people who live there.
Yeah. We need you in the olive groves.
10 and a half because you've 10 and a half. Got one leg.
10 and three quarters.
10 and three quarters. That's 10 and three true. Quarters.
Yeah. Let's be yeah. kind.
All right, you know? Cool.
Be kind, but honest.
Yeah.
So my aunt's name is Karen.
Yes.
And her and her Peruvian husband run a restaurant called The Lazy Lizard. Which anyone who's been to Prince Albert would have probably been there because it's one of the best places for coffee in town. They make apple pie.
Oh, nice.
All homemade stuff.
So hang on. Where are you going if you have to go through Prince Albert?
I also don't want to forget about my
okay, but
my
where are you going? Like, why would people ever find themselves there?
You're doing the garden routes and you maybe do the Kango Caves and Otsur, and then you go, oh, there's the Swartberg Pass. People come for the Swartberg Pass. They go into the Hell, which is a community in the Swartberg Mountains.
Actually called the Hell.
The Hell.
Yeah. Holy shit.
So a lot of biking groups come through there. A lot of tourist groups come through there. And then it's full of artists. The Hell. Yeah. It's very warm there.
Okay.
Fun, but it
all
is.
Right.
And it's just become a little cultural hub. Actually, it's on the road to nowhere. Like the song. You know, yeah, we're on a road
to nowhere. I'm trying to think who that is.
It's the guys who sing. On the first part.
What? On the... I don't know.
Anyways, yeah. So I called Kaz and I was feeling very inspired. I've never really made a lot of soup in my life.
Okay.
And I made my first Johannesburg pot of soup the other day.
But you should really...
Which is a great achievement
for me. I don't mean to criticize you, but I honestly think that it's very poor form to make soup before winter has arrived.
Well, what are we sitting in right now?
No, we're not sitting in winter. It's just a bit of rain.
Okay.
Okay, a lot of rain. I'm sorry, I take that back. It's a lot of rain.
And I haven't had a full winter in Johannesburg. So I'm getting prepped. And it came out quite, you know, okay tasting. And I chucked some spices in there. I even chucked some curry spice. I've never done that before.
Okay.
And I chucked the chili in.
Auntie yours probably knows what she's doing.
So yeah, I called Kaz and I was at the shop. I said, please help me.
Yeah.
And
so
she said, okay,
took
get
you through
this
an ingredient
this.
List.
She was actually with Juan as well. They were in the lizard.
This is the Peruvian that she's married to.
Yes, okay. Yes. Who could build you a shopping mall with a toothpick and a pocket knife if you took him into the desert. My whole family said that if we were stuck and we had to choose someone to survive
this
with.
This would be your guy. He's your zombie apocalypse team guy.
Juan is the zombie apocalypse.
Juan. All right.
Juan Pastrana, yeah.
Oh, it's Talking Heads. That's who it is. Thank you, J9.
Thank you.
I knew she'd know. Very good.
I probably conflated those two songs for the same artist, but
they're
probably different artists.
That's right. But Talking Heads is the answer. All right. So, Amanda,
but yeah, that's my soup story.
Is that the end of your soup story? Because I was waiting for the
you
start, bit about
you had
the
a
radish.
Steak story.
I was waiting for
there
the
was
radish,
no radish
part. Okay. Yeah. I only brought up the steak because, you know, sometimes it's the simple
things.
Listen, I know meat's expensive, right?
Yes.
So this is not something
I bought bones.
All right.
With some meat on them.
There's no need for you to like parade your poverty. That's
I'm already parading my disability, so I might as well.
I don't
continue.
I really don't think it's necessary for you. To,
I'm also fatherless.
Stick that poverty out there, and I mean, really, let's just stop. All right, this is not a victim Olympics. Those days are over. The point is, it feels so good when, especially when you live on your own and you feel like cooking is boring, right? And you really want to get to the point quickly, and you want to eat something that's healthy. I'm not a live to eat person, but damn it, a steak is still the winner. That would be my prison meal.
Your last meal before you get killed.
Yeah. The what are they called? Death row meal.
Death row meal.
So they do this thing in American prisons where if you are about to be put to death, even if you're a total fucking asshole, they
get
let you choose they let you choose whatever your last meal is. So people are like, I don't know, 700 donuts or whatever.
Yeah, obviously.
You're not going to get through 700 donuts, but they'll get you mostly what you really want.
I would also do a little pot of tea. I don't know if I'm allowed a pot of tea. Yeah.
I think you could probably ask. You get away with that. That wouldn't be too extravagant.
And I would also have some vleisgebakte pannekoek.
Okay, so.
Last drag of the cigarette and the guns get.
My mom used to do this thing when we were kids where she would make pancakes when it rained.
So you have fun memories of childhood.
Yeah, so whenever it rains
that's
like
wonderful.
This, it's the weirdest thing. Like I imagine, I can smell the cinnamon.
Mm.
and like I can taste those.
Can you make pancakes?
I can do so little in a kitchen. It is
I'll come and make you pancakes.
No. There's no need. I don't need someone cooking
but
me
I'm,
pancakes.
But I'm very happy to I'll come make right. you pancakes.
My mother said the other day, who feels like pancakes? It was, I can't remember if it was a rainy day or not. I was like, it's quite a lot of sugar, hey? Just shows you how things have changed. When you're a kid, you'll take any sugar. Yeah. In fact, it's the best thing ever. Now you're suddenly like, nah, you know, I feel like that. Pumlani says, my death row meal would be slop chips with salt and vinegar.
Here
it's not a bad choice, dude. I'm with you on that one. Bronwyn says, oh, Gareth, we're South African. Anything under 22 degrees is winter. I made curry for my family the other night.
There we go. Thank you for the support, really.
By the way, with all these people, the family in Prince Albert and everything, when you grew up in a little town like that and you spend most of your childhood there, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows everybody's business. And there must be like people in the town, and I don't mean for you to like rubbish them after you've been so nice about the place, but the smaller the environment, the more people are in each other's business. So everybody knows what everybody else is doing. You know, if you take your rubbish out and there's a box there, they bought a new TV, then suddenly everyone in the town's talking about how you bought a new TV.
Yes.
Or if, you know, one of you leaves the little town to go and do something in the big city, then that's a big topic conversation.
And it'll get featured in the newspaper as well.
Yeah. And does that irritate you, or is it kind of sweet?
I think it has more positives than negatives. I think the support you get from a small town, if it's a good town and there's good people around you, the positives outweigh the negatives. But I definitely think it is sometimes hard to keep your life completely yours in a small town, because you can't ever switch off someone coming to lend, I don't know, a pound of sugar or something.
Yeah, that's what happens.
But that's how, I think that's also, like you have, it's like with a relationship, right? You're not a perfect person. And we're not friends because you're perfect, and vice versa. So I think you have to take the perfect with the imperfect, but I think if you're a local there, and I've never been a local in my adult life for a long period of time, I kind of visit and leave.
Because you were in Cape Town before this, right?
Yeah, studying in Cape Town and working in Cape Town. It does a different thing, but I get to go and experience all the wonderful things of the town because I get to go visit. I get to go visit family, but it can also be overwhelming because you've got to go visit six aunts and five uncles.
But it's also cool that when you go there, I mean, apart from the shark attack story and the fact that you're, you know, you everybody there knows you already, but now they know you even better because of all the kids in the family. Oh, we know who Caleb is. There's a story. And then now you're on TV as well. It must be quite cool.
I think it's cool for my family, and the support from the town is also really awesome because a lot of the town watch CakeNet. So a lot of them are seeing me. Even the traffic officer the other day stopped my uncle. He wasn't speeding.
Yeah.
And said, oh, it's cake for your nephew up Deepa Vata's alcohol. So it's nice feedback for my family. And I think it's also just a nice way to, that's why I always speak about Prince Albert, because it's also shaped who I am as a person. You know, well, so when I go back there, there's lots of support.
You know, in honor of, we weren't going to announce this morning, but in honor of the town of Prince Albert, Flex has actually had his penis pierced, and he's going to show us all this morning on the show. So well done, Flex.
Nice, Flex.
That's very nice of you.
That's a big flex from Flex.
And he's heard it's such a nice place that he's going to go to Prince Albert and display.
Well, we have so many artists there, so performance arts will be welcomed. Yeah.
Okay, so there we go. We'll do it. Happy about that.
I think on a Sunday outside the NG Kerk after church, we'll get Flex to.
Isn't it Prince Albert the one that's that goes through
I've never Googled it, to be honest.
It does, man. It's a terrible thing to do. Who would do that? Who would want to do that? There's the town that's named after the piercing.
Hey, I can almost see my house from there. Literally, like two thumbs to the left is my home.
That's so picturesque, man.
That's the Kopje. That's the view from the Kopje.
You get a lot of rain there?
No. It's quite dry.
Well, we got some extra.
We have great lamb.
Yeah, man.
We have great
Karoo
jam.
Lamb.
And we don't have any
There's your favorite shop.
That's Pep. That's just opposite the church. I grew up going to Pep. Yeah,
are you guys on like Google Street View Live now?
If you go back up the road.
Go back up the road. Let's do this.
So the church will be on your right, but keep going.
Okay, keep going straight down that road. Go.
Let's go to the Lazy Lizard.
Let's go to the Lazy Lizard. This is fantastic. I've never been to Prince Albert, and this will suffice.
My first bank account was with Absa.
Okay, well, you see, we're learning all about Caleb this morning.
It's the only bank we have.
Yes.
That's...
Yes, keep going straight.
No, don't go into the post office.
Don't go to the post office. Keep going. Why do you want to go to the post office? It's not
this
even open.
This is like Glenworld and Big Les.
All right, let's go. This is fun.
Okay, keep going. So you just passed the library.
Go.
And then, wait, we have to get to the tennis courts because we have to have a moment of nostalgia. So keep going.
Okay.
A little bit further.
Keep going.
Okay.
Some nice houses down there, this way.
To your right, you'll see the tennis courts.
Okay, just turn to the right slightly. Ah, look.
That's where I used to play when I was able-bodied.
Tennis. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. And what's lovely about a Saturday tennis session is that it's the local courts. So everyone rocks up there with beers, coffee. Or they can go to the Lazy Lizard for coffee because it's 10 meters away.
Guys, I reckon what we must do, Flex and
have
and
a tennis tournament
James,
there.
We must, no. Oh. Every time we have a guest here, we must go on Google Street View like this and make them give us a tour of their like neighborhood.
So,
don't you think that
so
would be
Flex,
fun?
Go a little bit more forward.
Okay. Go back to Prince Albert.
Okay. You're coming up to the mecca of all family achievements.
All right, here we are. Go.
Okay. Keep going. You'll see a green roof. It's coming up.
There on the right.
Yeah, that old gable to your right.
Turn to the right.
Okay.
A little bit more.
And let's
there we go.
Get a nice front view.
Okay, let's go right up in front of the place.
You might even see the dog on the front porch.
Oh, wow, look at that. There it is. The lazy. You know what,
there
dude? This has been the most
fun tour. So I haven't lied to you.
Ever.
And you'll see they've got that little sign there, and they'll always say, you know, kind of what's happening. So if there's fresh croissants or you know, something new that they're trying, they're always pumping out new food.
That building went up in 1803. 1903,
I think.
Very nice.
So yeah, that's and I've got such wonderful memories of being there. Yeah. So and then if you keep going all the way, but don't get into the Swartberg Pass.
I have enjoyed this tour of Prince Albert, of course.
And just up the road is Gay's Dairy, also a very famous Gay's Dairy.
Is that so they milk the gays?
No, they milk the Guernseys.
Oh, but someone called Gay.
Gay van Hasselt, yeah. She's an awesome human being.
She goes in.
Well, I think it's automated now.
Oh.
But back in the day,
she's not a milkmaid.
No.
Okay, because...
But do Gay's Dairy products get sold here.
But do we still have milkmaids? I don't think they
I haven't seen one
anymore.
In Prince Albert.
I don't think milkmaids are a thing anymore.
But yeah, that's the tour of the town. And everyone, please come.
All right. Saturday market in Prince Albert, says Tracy, is the best pancakes and breakfast. Rooster Cooker.
I think... Tracy who?
Tracy Bard.
Okay, because my mom's name is Tracy. So,
mom,
if you're watching.
Dave says, March 2025 sees a boom in Prince Albert tourism. Police have arrested 5 gays. You guys are so funny.
But on the Panakuk comments, that's the Panakuk I'd have on death row.
Okay.
One of Marie's Panakuk.
Have you guys thought about what you'd have as your last meal? You wouldn't be able to eat because what? They're going to kill
James
you?
James wouldn't have anything.
You'd rather eat like a lot because then if you shit yourself or whatever, that it's more of a thing for them to clean up, these people who killed you.
So you care about the after effect there?
Nah, I don't really. No, I mean, you're not there to enjoy it.
We're still waiting on Flex.
Flex, what do you want for your last meal? No, man, you can't have poison. No, seriously, like what's your favorite thing? It would be your last meal on earth. It's got to be something you absolutely love. I mean, you just said like Karoo lamb as well. That would be up there.
Yeah.
That's
a little roast.
What is it? Go, James. Your mother's lasagna.
Okay. He's trying to compete with the family cooking.
All right. No, that's not bad. Flex, have you decided? Yeah, chicken's good, dude. And that's not just because you're a black man.
No, chicken's great.
Don't worry.
Chickens are great.
We allow people to comply with stereotypes if they want to.
When you travel, do you eat the airplane food?
No, it's horrific.
Okay. So what do you do? You fast?
But I mean, on most planes, what do you mean when I'm doing international travel?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, then I'll eat it. But
you'll eat
if
the
I'm
box?
Doing a short Cape Town or a Durban trip here, no.
You don't have the sandwich
necessary.
In the
No, unless
wrapper.
I'm very hungover.
Okay.
Trotters and bean curry, says Vyasan.
I had my first trotter last year.
Yes.
It was quite interesting. Yeah. It was very gelatinous.
It's pig.
It's still hinged. And it was very gelatinous, but it was.
You know, was eating that won't bring your leg back.
I know. And I ate the right one just in case. But I still look down every morning. And
Bronwyn says bottomless prawns.
Bottomless
it's not just
prawns.
Eight like the restaurants offer. So Flex. You just have prawns and prawns and prawns. Flex, be specific. What chicken? Bitcoin Boot wants to know. Fried chicken. Fried chicken. Nothing wrong with that. Dr. Robin says, friends of mine moved to Prince Albert a few years ago. Great little guest farm called Yellow House and another great restaurant.
I know Yellow House.
It's amazing to me that these little towns, like that place can't have more than a couple of hundred people in it, right?
It's got a couple of thousand.
Okay, that's amazing. I would never have said that from that picture that we saw earlier. But
because you've got a lot of farms in the area as well.
But it is small.
Yeah.
It's great that there are these little restaurants and these little places that sell stuff and this dairy. And because I would always think going into a place like that, there are only so many people. Any business you launch is bound to be just desperate, like for customers the whole time. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is quite amazing. And COVID was quite an interesting time as well, because my uncle and aunt only ran a restaurant and like an internet cafe. And with COVID, every shop closed. Yeah. So they, and the local grocer, I think it was either an OK or a Spa, it's one of the two, was running out of fresh produce. Yeah. And not everyone has transport to drive to Oudtshoorn during COVID. You had to also get a permit to go. So my
what a stupid time.
Yeah. Well, they had to work with what they kind of had in front of them. So they went to Oudtshoorn, they would stock up their combi, bring it back, and they opened a little deli. So they opened a mini deli in the Lazy Lizard, and that still exists there.
Wow.
So now they have a deli which has local products and products that they also make.
So it's also supporting everyone else in the area.
Yeah. And I often bring up, I mean, I'm pretty sure I've given you Lazy Lizard rusks. I think I have given you.
Maybe
I dreamt about it.
No, I think you. Well, then that's very sweet. But bring them. Flex and I'll have them, right?
I'll bring you some Lazy Lizard
rusks. Okay, so Bitcoin Boot says, don't forget to add a Brunnerwein and Coke to that meal. Oh, yeah, KWV tenure, please. Hawk Tour girl comes from a small town like that also, says Shaxla.
There we go.
I don't know what we're trying to say
so
about
much hope
the Hawk Tour girl. Prisoners built the Swartberg Pass. Lots of them died in the winter, says Jethro. Starved because provisions couldn't be delivered due to the snow. Does it snow up there?
It does snow in winter. And Thomas Bain built that pass with the help of many slaves and convicts.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, someone has to do it.
I don't know Bain personally. But, yeah.
All right. Different
time.
You didn't know him personally?
Thomas Bain?
It's a while ago, you know.
But he might be on X. Don't blame Anything's yourself. Possible
don't
nowadays.
Blame yourself. All right. So here, listen to this quickly. South Africa's mining sector remains vital to the economy, contributing 6% to GDP and employing 472,000 people.
Well,
did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Severe challenges, though. Job losses, declining tax revenue, failing commodity prices have weakened the industry, with power outages, logistical inefficiencies, and regulatory issues making the situation a lot worse. The closure of ArcelorMittal's steel operations further highlights the sector's fragility. I mean, ArcelorMittal came into South Africa. There used to be something called ISCOR, Iron and Steel Corporation. And they have a huge space in Pretoria, which was just like factories and smelters and places where they would be machining iron and making it into useful things and supplying it to industry and all kinds of things. And because ArcelorMittal have pulled out, it's like a ghost town now, which is so sad, because you see these places deteriorate very quickly when there isn't the money maker, you know, the big business in there. So there are improvements people are talking about, but they say that our most important industry, mining, is in a lot of trouble. It's not a great thought, but it's something we have to consider. And a lot of people in this country are still obsessed with, you know, what we can get out of the ground, which is obviously a big part of things when it comes to mining. That's your product. But the bigger worry we should have is that 472,000 people work in that business. And
well, could be jobless.
Yeah, they could. I mean, if we see these declines, and this is why this government has to take seriously what our international trade relationships are like, particularly with America, whether they like it or not. This is what they've got. And we'll talk about this some more after 7 o'clock this morning with our guest who's going to be joining us then. But while I got you here, are you, because you're on this show, are you spending a lot more time online, or do you do exactly the same things you've always done? Because you have to interact with people, I suppose.
It's interesting. People want to
talk to you more because they see you on TV.
Yeah, it's not like my social media has blown up. after being on the show. But I definitely feel with the work I'm doing, you constantly with working with people, you're constantly working with text and story, and you on TV every day. So I think
you're just tired.
I'm tired of that.
You're tired of reading.
Not tired of saying lines, but tired of then engaging on a social right. platform. So I think it's been very tough to actually. I've actually switched off a lot of social stuff, and taken a break from engaging with things on a daily basis. So I prefer listening to sort of more long form stuff like podcasts.
Right.
Picking up a book.
I don't know if I've asked you this before, but what's the most frustrating part of your day just because of
With the leg.
Yeah, with the leg.
Yeah. Cause these are also great questions.
This. No, so I thought about this because...
no one asks me questions like this.
Really?
It's usually what's happened. And it's an awful first interaction, so I guess it's understandable.
Yeah, I mean, we had Jen here last year. No, but here's the thing I'm interested in.
Is bizarre.
That, like, when I hurt myself, when you, like, cut yourself or whatever, you think, oh, the worst part is the shower because, you know, now I can't get this wet, for example. I've got, like, a cut or whatever.
Yeah.
And let's say you've got some kind of muscular pain or whatever, then, you know, maybe lifting things is very difficult or whatever. What's the most frustrating part of your day where you sometimes have to ask for help? Because it's just...
Well, yeah, that's twofold. I mean, it depends on what's happening with my leg, because I think any other amputee or any person with a physical disability will know this, that it's not like you just lose your leg or you lose a limb and you get a prosthetic and you carry on.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing relationship. So,
sure.
So imagine, you know, I always know I'm going to get some form of minor injury or cut or something based on the fact that I'm wearing hardware. I wear a piece of machinery, metal.
Absolutely.
One of the tricky things is waking up in the morning sometimes. So waking up in the middle of the night, needing to go pee.
And there's no light sometimes.
Well, there's no light. I use crutches.
Yeah.
Because to put my leg on or...
But you don't have to, like, make it worse for yourself by having stairs at home, do you?
The house I'm staying in here doesn't have stairs, no. But if there are stairs, then
it's also
window into the garden, I guess.
Yeah.
Not jumping out of the window. You get the picture.
Yeah.
but definitely in the morning there's a momentum shift that happens in terms of putting the liner on, getting the leg into a hard shell, because your skin is soft
tissue.
How
much time does that add to your getting ready in the morning?
Not a massive amount, but it's more just allowing that, not like rushing out of the door first thing. At least like 30 to 40
minutes. I mean, you got here this morning before me for the show.
I did, but I'm not just down the road.
Yeah, yeah, but not that that's an achievement, but it's like I suddenly thought, I wonder how many extra minutes you have to budget in your day just for these kinds of things.
And the thing is, because I think that I'm not disabled, I'm like, cool, I'm fine. I'm like Gareth. I can just get up and do my thing. But I realize, like, sometimes I really am slower. Sometimes I charge my leg. So I have days where my leg loses battery. I'm very lucky I have a good knee.
Right, because the mechanism's
actually... I've got a microprocessor. So if I haven't charged my knee, it just locks into safety mode. And then I really look like a fool walking around in public.
What does it look like when you walk in safety mode? Is it like you're lugging a pirate's wooden leg?
Think of, like, you know, Frankenstein's like main man, you know, sort of.
Oh, really?
Coming up. Yeah, well,
you hobble badly.
It. Yeah, I already hobble a little bit, but my hobble gets a capital H. I think the other thing that's also tricky is.
Capital H hobble.
Is long flights.
Yeah.
I always hope I have two open seats. But if not, I tell the person early on, listen, my leg's probably going to come off at some point in time during this trip.
Right.
A, are you okay with that? But B, I'm sorry. And it's going to happen either way. So I take my leg off because with the air pressure,
of course,
your leg swells up. But then I have to also carry lotion with me because the plane you get...
Vaseline.
Not Vaseline, but, well, maybe the cocoa butter Vaseline. But I need to moisturize because you dry out on a plane. So there's those little things, and every amputee and every person, you got your own little things that you do at work for you. It's like amputees have their own little thing that they do to kind of adjust, figure things out. Like,
damn irritating, hey?
Yeah, so I travel with plasters.
Fucking shark. I'm telling you, man. Shark.
But you know what? I have zero anger towards sharks, and I think that's been one of the coolest things as well.
I know. You've actually been a big supporter of shark conservation, which I thought was quite cool.
Our short film just got invited to the International Ocean Film Festival.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, you know that one.
Yeah.
which is just, it's
yeah, you know that one. Yeah, there's the Cannes Film Festival.
Sundance, and then there's
Sundance,
the
then there's that one, the International Ocean Fair. Where is that?
I have zero idea. I haven't.
Tuvalu.
Yeah, it's international though.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is where that short film that we spoke about last time when I met you.
Yes, it's really a second festival wreath that it gets. So short films, for those that don't know, will hit like a short film circuit. So it's not quite like your Cannes, your Sundance film festivals. They're smaller film festivals, but it's a way for your film to get exposure and also feedback. And
Caleb,
the feedback.
Caleb says, Janine, shut up about your stupid film. Caleb, who's your hairdresser? I have hair envy over here, says Janine.
I have no hairdresser. In fact, well, my hairdresser is actually on the show. They cut my hair every 2 weeks or so because I have to have this.
Yeah,
so I have to look the same.
Ah, dude, I used to do that.
For over a year.
When we did Idols, I didn't have to go for a haircut because they would do it on set.
Like you look the same.
It didn't matter because I'm not acting. So it was, if it was a little bit different, that's fine. But they also, they were really good.
Yeah.
So I'd sit on I'd go, oh, okay, we've got an extra 20 minutes here between, you know, the takes or whatever. Hey, can I have a haircut? They'd be like, yeah, sure.
That's nice.
Get it done.
Fade.
It's very cool.
But on the hair thing, I have, and this not to boost my own ego, but it's been amazing how many people comment on my hair. It's a very interesting. Some people on the show thought it was fake. They thought I was wearing a wig.
Yeah, you've got good hair.
Give it a tug later and it's real.
No, you've got good hair.
Thanks, man.
Shitty leg, but good hair.
Yeah, I make up for it. What I lose in my leg, I make up for in head.
There we go. There we are. And okay, here, Durban Dope says running out of Q20 with the leg. Do you ever have to give it like a pss, pss, pss,
I don't,
Q20?
I've thought about it. I really have thought about it.
What do those things cost again?
They're expensive.
Yeah, but tell me.
So you're looking
people
at,
need to know.
For a microprocessor, you're looking at anything from 500,000 and up. ZR. Yeah.
For your leg. And you know, most people waking up this morning don't think about the leg. They're not grateful for the leg.
For a good microprocessor.
Yeah, but I'm saying most of these assholes, even the people in the comment section here, they're like, my leg, I'm so tired.
Hey, yeah.
If you didn't have that, R500,000 and up for his fake leg.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, that's every 6 years. That's every 2 to 6 years because it's like a car. Has a warranty, needs to get serviced.
And it's not like there's a great secondhand market.
There's
you're not
no
going to get the value
market.
Back.
You don't want someone's secondhand prosthetic.
Hell no.
Because you don't know where it's been.
No,
first of all. No, the socket's separate. You don't know how much wear and tear it's got. It's like an iPhone. Like I don't want your old iPhone.
No,
or your
not.
Android.
No, people want their own new one. Fresh from the Chinese.
And that's the other thing. I take for granted that, I mean, I have my days where I'm like, oh, I wake up and I feel sorry for myself. But the fact that I'm able to be independent in a city, be in a new city.
Absolutely.
You know, and be employed on a very well-supported television show, I take it for granted. So I'm also like, it's nice to take a moment also just to be grateful for that. You know, even I was thinking about it yesterday when you guys very haphazardly invited me to come in this morning.
I don't make it sound like we decided this at the last minute.
Yeah.
James.
Cool. Like the last minute and a half, but it's all good. I was thinking how many people get the opportunity to also come in and converse.
Talk shit, man.
Yeah.
I get to
come in and without fear or trepidation or anxiety and come in and actually see you. Connect with your audience.
Carl says, how does Caleb travel to America? Because there's always that second
America.
Leg. No, there's that second leg of the journey, which you wouldn't be allowed to do.
By boat, brother.
500,000 for a leg. Can you upgrade it? Are there any custom fits? I mean, like, how expensive does it get? That's a good point.
Yeah, you're going over a bar.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's your knee. Now you add a foot, add 20 to 40K for a foot.
Holy.
Then your
hell.
Socket. Let's say it's 60K for a socket.
I'm suddenly so damn grateful for my...
When you walk out of here, you're going to fly out of here.
I am. I'm going to feel like I'm walking on air.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
But
over $1 million, huh?
So I'm going to get into an industry where I can
make
that
some serious
time. I can make some serious time or have some serious donors.
Yeah, but I mean...
But I'd prefer making the time.
Sure, because all the other cripples are lining up to get the donors
as
well.
Yeah, and then I can maybe hand it out.
Those other cripples. You mustn't let them take your place.
It's first come, first serve.
Yeah, right.
If you got a foot in the door, you keep it. I don't care if it's bleeding, you keep it there.
Carl says, Gareth, my dead aunt once cut your hair on set. Obviously, she was still alive at the time. Okay, well then you can't even thank her for
is
me.
Bitcoin, because she's is Bitcoin dead, but is Bitcoin Boot nice. A good supporter of the show?
Bitcoin Boot is not only a supporter of the show. We had him on the show for the first time the other day. Because I'm now what I've started to do is there are often people in the comments who sound really interesting, and then if they are able to make it into studio, then we get to meet them properly.
Awesome.
And then they have to really stand by what they say, right? So they're responsible for their comments because they're real people, as opposed to like being internet trolls.
What's the shift? Do you find a big shift?
No, it's cool. Like it's Bitcoin cool. But for example, we found out all about why he calls himself Bitcoin, but he's a maximalist Bitcoin fan. And he actually talked to me after the show about getting a hardware wallet for Bitcoin. Yep. And that's the way to do it. You don't mess around with these trading platforms.
Way.
And yeah. So he's got me into that. And he bakes bread. So
okay, well, maybe we can connect Bitcoin Boot with the Lazy Lizard because they sell bread.
There we go. I think so it's a bit far, though.
It's a nice circular economy system we've got there.
Yeah, but I don't know that we want to be making bread in Centurion and sending it to Prince Albert.
Actually,
it won't be as nice.
He can go there and he can teach them what he makes.
Why? Maybe he doesn't want to live in fucking Prince Albert. What's wrong with you?
It's just an invite. It's just an invite. It's an invite.
Honestly, this is just insane. Hundreds of thousands worth of extras. Wow, it's like a Lamborghini leg, says Mapello.
It is like a Lamborghini leg. It doesn't make the same noise, but you want
and,
your legs.
And driving's chill.
Driving.
How long? Yeah, but how long can you drive for before it becomes?
Well,
because the same as being on a plane. If you're driving for a long time,
I've actually driven without my leg before. I just take it off. If it's a long drive.
Have you ever got out of a fine by taking your leg out, showing them you've only got a half?
I have gotten out of a fine rushing to the prosthetist.
By the way, if you haven't got your leg on and you're driving, how do you get to the accelerator?
It's automatic. I can't drive.
Accelerator, dude. Accelerator. Yeah. I'm not talking
accelerator,
about the clutch.
Accelerator,
yeah. So you use your left leg for both?
Left leg. I can't control my right leg. There's no control from here down. So watch here. I mean, there's nothing happening there.
Right.
You know?
Okay. Has anyone ever like... stood on your toe or whatever?
No, I stand on people's toes.
You stand on people's toes?
Even during performance, I've
stood. But have they ever stood on yours and go, oh, I'm sorry, and then you're like, I don't feel a thing.
I have had that a couple of times. It's usually me messing up. But I often get, whenever I meet young kids, they're so fascinated with my leg. Mm. And it's the best experience because there's no filter. And they're just learning.
Yeah, I don't know when it is that people are told that you've got to treat someone differently. I never had that. I'm a mental case because I've always thought it's interesting to ask people the obvious stuff.
Yes, right. But I think you time and place.
Nah, I'm kind of.
I don't want to be as I'm going into the toilet. Like quickly, I'll tell you my whole journey as I come out.
Sure. But what I'm saying is that when you meet people, you should just treat everybody the same.
Yeah. A friend of mine recently said to me, though, he said, the interesting thing is you've got this journey to process, you know, of the trauma you've experienced, but also telling your story and sharing it. And then you've also got the whether you like it or not, the interaction where you almost have to help people with the questions they want to ask you because they don't know how to ask them.
But who screwed them up in the first place? Who put them in the position?
It's society.
Were they too... afraid to ask the question they really want to ask you. Why are they, and who is it? Like, who are these people who think it's compassionate to patronize somebody, you know? Mm. So they see that you're different in some way. The Achshem people. Like, who are those people? Those people I have a big problem with. They are not kind. They are evil people because
you're stretching it.
They're evil fuckers. I'm telling you. They must be burnt at the stake. I'm going to say that on record.
Okay. Well, the Achshem. There's hope for the Achshem people because the Achshem people see, oh, wait, I don't have to be Achshem for you.
No, I mean like the ones who treat you super, super nicely because they go, oh, the poor guy doesn't have a leg.
No.
They may be extra, extra nice and weird. They're weird with you, right?
It's hard, hey?
Yeah, those kind of people. Yeah. Those ones.
It's a struggle.
Yeah, it's a struggle. Shame. Yeah. Tell me about your struggle.
Why has our accent gone there?
Because that's how they sound.
Oh, shame, man.
Have you ever played fetch with your legs, says Matthew?
No. Because I would be hopeless and I'd lose. But what have I played with my leg? I've got some mates that you know, my leg will just disappear out of the room and then I'm legless.
You see, now those are your friends.
Those are my friends. Those aren't the Akshane people.
Yeah, no,
those are my friends.
That's the opposite. That's just.
And I'm yet to do. French. I'm yet to do a beer chug out of the valve of the socket.
Oh hell no! But you don't want to damage it, right?
No, but the socket can take.
Oh, okay.
Inside the socket, where my stump, residual limb, whatever
God.
You want to put.
All right.
Sits inside a liner, so it's not that bad.
Oh, okay.
But I've yet to do that. Yeah.
Okay. Well. Don't invite me to that. A lovely, sincere guest. He outshines you, Gareth, says Karen.
Wow.
Well, yes.
It's Karen. I mean, thanks, Karen.
That's not hard to outshine me, but the standards are very low here, Karen.
I'm the frame and Gareth's the picture in the frame.
Bitcoin Boots says, any dates because you fear you'll Oscar them? Any dates lost because they fear you'll Oscar them? Yeah, like, did you feel that Oscar really ruined dating
Now Oscar's become a verb.
Oscar, yeah, Oscar'd. Someone gets Oscar'd, especially around Valentine's Day, which was just a couple of days ago.
And that's
tough time for you cripples.
Yeah, also it's the day my granddad passed away.
Oh, is it? Okay, I didn't know him.
Wait for that moment.
It's fine. I didn't know him, so I'm
no, no, but no, you know, love my granddad. He did pass away on Valentine's Day, which is also just a very bizarrely.
Are you being serious, your granddad?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, well,
but on the Oscar'd thing, I think I've been called Oscar before.
Oh, shit.
Someone stopped and asked me if I was Oscar Pistorius, and I told them he's bilateral below the knee. So both,
obviously. Why didn't they know that?
Yeah, like, come on, you know.
Bilateral
he's got
below
his
the knee.
Knees, but not his feet.
Yeah, dummy.
I've got my knee and my foot, but not my knees. My
stupid,
other right knee.
Able-bodied people who don't know the difference.
And it's really, it's like such an old joke.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
Yeah, but do you have a gun, just in case? Just warn us
only
now?
In one of my drawers in the room.
Okay.
Yeah, only one of my drawers. Okay, but I crutch to the bathroom. I don't go on my stumps.
You crutch there.
So I can't really carry much unless I have
an assault rifle.
I can have
on
a
strap.
Yeah.
That could work.
I go to the bathroom at night.
All right, listen, I've had lots of fun having you here again. People have loved you. I do have to read this though. This is funny as hell. Carl DeSantis says, I love how Gareth can't wrap his head around how automatic cars work. Moron.
I'll teach him, Carl. Thanks, man.
All right, very good.
It's been really great. And
all right, awesome to see you, dude. And we'll catch up, but keep well.
Thanks, Paul.
Keep doing the things.
Big loves.
Cool. All right, that's Caleb Swanepoel. Just hang on. You walk across. Are you going to take a break now anyway? Okay. You hobble through my camera shot. What the hell's wrong with you? Just fucking wait. All right.
I need the bathroom and then I get phantom pain if I don't pee.
We just hang on a second. It's not going to kill anybody. All right. What is wrong with these people with no legs and bathrooms and Oscar and Caleb? It's just a disaster. All right. So I've got something very cool for us after this. And I think people immediately assume this is going to be controversial, but I actually think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. We're going to talk to Ernst von Sale, who's with AfriForum. He's their head of public relations. He's had a very busy 2 weeks. And I thought everybody else is either getting him on their shows to, you know, try and drag AfriForum across the coals for, you know, trying to get Donald Trump to say mean things about our government, which would be outrageous if it were true. Or they bring him on because they want to make him account for himself in some way. And I thought it would just be interesting to talk to him about what's actually happening with AfriForum. They're very much in the news in the last couple of weeks, all because the Americans are suddenly saying to our government, hey, there are some of the things that you're doing, which we're not just going to keep clapping from the sidelines for. And AfriForum have found themselves in the crosshairs of the Department of International Relations and some others. We'll find out exactly what that means from Ernst von Sale in just a short while. We'll get to that next.